Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, in today's busy world, finding time to sit through yet another weekly meeting might seem like overload. But according to my first guest, scheduling a 30-minute weekly meeting with your spouse or loved one may be the very best way to improve your relationship and keep it thriving. And we'll talk about that more in just a moment. Coming up around 12:30, we'll talk with the voice behind the popular Baby Whispering series. Her new book is called Family Whispering, and it provides common sense strategies for communicating and connecting with the people you love, making your whole family stronger. She used to write with Tracy Hogg, and she's a journalist and has continued on the work that they were doing together. So we'll talk to her in just a moment, in about 12:30. Sorry. My first guest is Marsha Naomi Berger. She's been licensed as a clinical social worker and psychotherapist for more than 30 years. As a therapist, she's committed to marriage, strengthening relationships, and fostering emotional, mental, and spiritual health. Her approach is both collaborative and holistic. And in addition to maintaining a private psychotherapy practice, Naomi Berger leads marriage and communication workshops locally and nationally. She teaches classes for therapists at Alliant International University, San Francisco campus, and she's a popular conference speaker. And her new book is called Marriage Meetings for Lasting Love, 30 Minutes a Week to the Relationship You've Always Wanted. Welcome, Marsha Naomi Berger.
Thank you so much, Vicki. Thanks for having me on your show.
It's our pleasure. And I should say that all of your work is listed under Marsha Naomi Berger, but you go by Naomi, just so we don't...
I'll answer to either.
Just so we don't confuse everybody there. And so I wanted to just talk a little bit about the book, first of all, and how this came together for you. You've been doing this work, as I said, for over 30 years. I know that you say you don't just talk about this, you practice what you preach. So tell us in a nutshell why you wanted to write this book.
Well, I wrote this book because I found in my own life that marriage meetings are a wonderful proactive approach to remind each other how much we care for each other, and also deal with all the little issues before they become big issues, and make sure that we have good teamwork, and also address the need to go out on dates together. So the marriage meeting is a very compact way to take care of all the bases in the relationship in a very positive, respectful way.
Right. And, you know, I said and you say this yourself, that, you know, in today's busy world, scheduling another meeting, some people might raise eyebrows and say, you know, that's really the last thing I need. I mentioned it to Eric in the hallway before we came into the studio today. You know, listen up, because you can have weekly meetings with your girlfriend. And he kind of raised his eyebrows. Do you want to make a comment on that, Eric?
Well, I have two responses to that. First of all, 30 minutes a week is a pretty short time if you value your relationship, but you'd like to have more intimacy, romance, teamwork, and smoother resolution of issues, which are the wonderful benefits of marriage meetings. And number two, actually, there's three points. The second point is if you have time to stew about what's missing from your relationship, what you'd like to be better or just complain, you certainly have the time, and it probably takes much less time to have a good constructive conversation with your partner at least once a week. And at 30 minutes, that's the time of a sitcom. Now, about Eric's response, this is not an unusual response, and often there's something behind it, like, well, what's she up to now if she wants to meet with me? Is she going to be criticizing me, or is she going to give me a whole list of projects she wants me to do or new ways to do things that when I'm comfortable with the old ways? So I have a few responses to that about the time.
Right. Do you want to comment on that, Eric?
No, it's good. I'll let you guys speculate.
He's going to leave it alone.
Okay. But men actually, it turns out men actually really, really like the marriage meetings once they do them. Eric's response is typical of,
yes,
of many men.
Yeah.
And I've actually had people, I've had a couple of husbands write in after an article of mine was published in a national magazine. A couple of them wrote in, one of them wrote he was afraid to have the meeting when his wife mentioned it, but he did it and he really liked it and they're going to continue the meetings. And I think that the men like it once they do it because they realize that this is not a place where everything's going to all hang out about what's wrong with the relationship.
Right.
It's more of a constructive kind of a meeting. And it's very affirming because the first part of the meeting is all about how each partner appreciates the other and expresses what they like about each other.
Right. And you discuss this in length at the book. You've got some great ideas in there. But before we go into that, I want to just ask you this. How do we get both parties on board? Because as you've said, you know, sometimes one party is reluctant, and it could be the female. But how do we get both parties on board to agree to do this in the first place?
Okay, there are a few ways that this can be approached, and it depends on how well you know your partner and what your partner is going to be most likely to be receptive to. A very simple way is to explain that the meeting is very positive and that the recommendations for the meetings are to, if when you do discuss challenges, then it's going to be in a very soft way, especially at the beginning. I say in the book, avoid the four hot buttons until you get used to what's going to feel like an artificial structure,
right,
of the marriage meeting. The four hot buttons that we don't talk about in early meetings are sex, in-law issues, money, and parenting differences, because those are things people get worked up about and might not be used to communicating constructively about. So first get used to the meeting, bring up early challenges, and you can explain to your partner that we're going to talk about things that are easy at the beginning, like I might tell you to please hide the potato chips because I'm trying to lose some weight, or keep the junk food out of my way.
Right.
So that things get also it could be, let's see, how about what I cook for dinner? Would you rather have more vegetarian or more meat? These are simple challenges that can create a spirit of goodwill. The goal of your first marriage meeting is to have a nice positive experience so that you'll want to have a second meeting and so on.
Right. And I know in the book you say that each meeting really is a standalone meeting. All the issues you bring up should be resolved in that meeting. And you
did I say that?
You say something like that, yeah.
Okay, I'll comment on that.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. One of the things I say is that Rome was not built in a day.
Right.
So don't be discouraged. You're not going to resolve every issue in every marriage meeting, but you'll certainly come a long way towards getting closure on things that are on your mind. The closure might be, I'm glad that we got this discussion started. Let's continue it next week. Rome wasn't built in a day. You can even say that to each other and to yourself, that change takes time.
Right. So it's building upon. It is not going to get solved. You know, every issue is not going to get solved in a meeting.
The big ones may not, but
upon.
A lot of little ones will.
Yeah. And you say you give advice of having a four-part agenda, one, appreciating each other, coordinating chores, planning for good times, and addressing problems and challenges. I wonder if we could look at those four parts of the agenda.
Okay. So you'd like me to tell you a little bit about what happens in each part?
Yeah, just a little bit. How do we express appreciation and make it sound genuine? Because I know a lot of people have a hard time sitting in a meeting. And one of the things you say is don't sit across the table, sit next to each other.
Good point to remember, yes.
Creates a better connection. So how do we do that, express appreciation and be genuine about
it? How do we do it? Okay, so I do talk in the book, I talk about communication skills, and one of the important ones that we use for expressing appreciation is making the I statement. Many of us have gotten into a pattern of maybe not wanting to feel vulnerable and making it all about judging rather than saying your true feelings, judging the other person. So even if I say, let's say a husband likes his wife's hairdo, new hairdo, he could say, I really like your new hairdo. It compliments your face so nicely, and you look perky in it. Or I like the way you look perky in it. that would be a nice way to make an I statement, a very simple one. The I statement for appreciation could be about anything. It could be about a nice character trait that was shown, like, I appreciated your kindness in visiting my sick aunt with me last Wednesday, or I appreciated the wonderful hug you gave me when you came home today.
Right.
And this is being vulnerable rather than saying, you look good today. That's a you statement, even though it's a compliment.
Right.
There's nothing terribly wrong with it, but it just comes more, feels more heartfelt when you say, I love the way you look today.
Yes. And why? Because sometimes if we just say, I love the way you look today, it could be, I didn't like the way you looked yesterday. That's how some people would interpret it, right?
Yeah. Some people might say, what about yesterday? What about last year?
That wouldn't be very productive. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll look at coordinating chores, because we hear a lot about this. And I know my next guest is also going to talk a little on that from the family context. But I know that you say sharing chores really can be people often say they'd like a little more sex in their relationships, and sharing chores can come up often. So we'll talk about that when we come back.
Okay.
And my guest here is Marsha Naomi Berger. Her book is called Marriage Meetings for Lasting Love, 30 Minutes a Week to the Relationship You've Always Wanted. Please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Radio with no added hormones or preservatives. All natural, alternative talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest is Marsha Naomi Berger. Her website is marshanaomiberger.com. And her new book is Marriage Meetings for Lasting Love, 30 Minutes a Week to the Relationship You've Always Wanted. And this is a great book. We're talking about having a 30-minute weekly meeting with your loved one to sit down and talk about some issues. And we were talking about the four-part agenda that Naomi recommends. And we talked about expressing appreciation. It would help today if I could talk. My throat keeps spasming because I have really bad allergies. So excuse me. But we talked before the break about expressing appreciation. And we're going to talk now about coordinating chores, because that's a big issue in many relationships, even today. So go ahead, Naomi. Tell us what we need to know about coordinating chores and how we make this part of our weekly meeting.
Well, coordinating chores ideally is a collaborative issue, or let's say a collaborative process where partners cooperate and together decide what are the most important things that need to be done to keep the business part of the relationship running smoothly. And for example, when we realized one of our trees needed to be trimmed outside of our house, I say, okay, tree needs to be trimmed. Who wants to handle it? Not you should do this, but who's going to volunteer to do it? So the person who has the time and interest ideally does it, or if neither one wants to, then they figure out how they're going to maybe take turns doing the things that aren't so popular to do. But the main thing is it's in a spirit of goodwill, and you prioritize together and make agreements about who's going to do what, and then you can follow up on those agreements in the next marriage meeting, if they've been kept. That's a great thing to appreciate your partner for. I appreciate that you've been coordinating with the tree trimming guy.
Right.
And it's nice to know it's getting handled.
Right, right. And step number or agenda item number three is plan for good times. And I think this is so critical because, you know, we get so wrapped up in day to day, just getting through the day. That we forget to plan for those good times, and then we can forget why we fell in love with each other in the first place. So give us some ideas about how we can plan for good times. What should we be incorporating into our weekly meeting?
Well, part three of the meeting is called Plan for Good Times because that's exactly what's done. And you've probably heard, and probably most listeners have heard, about the importance of going out on a weekly date, but how many people are actually doing that? By having the weekly marriage meeting, this secures a time to plan that weekly date so that it actually happens. A time just for the two of you. You can be not a time to talk about issues or chores, but it's a good time to just relax, enjoy being together. Remember to make appreciative comments while you're on your dates as well as every day.
Mm-hmm.
And just have a nice time together. I write in the book, it's a time to daydream out loud. Say whatever's on your mind about life, maybe or what kind of things you'd like to be doing in the future, how you're enjoying yourself in the moment.
Right.
It's just a time to relax together, to be more of the way you were when you were courting before you got married.
Yeah, to be spontaneous, so it doesn't just become another chore as well.
Right. Doesn't have to be the same night every week either. It can be depending on what either of you wants to do and when it is.
Right. And then the fourth part of the agenda is to address problems and challenges. But just to recap, you said in the beginning, let's leave money, sex, in-laws, and parenting, etc., those four key things off,
uh-huh,
off the agenda when we're beginning our meetings. So what kind of issues might we raise there?
Well, like the one I mentioned, I'm trying to lose weight. Simple things. So just to get used to having a meeting, I'm trying to lose weight. Would you please hide the junk food from me? Or don't even bring it home in the first place if you can leave it at your office away from home. That's a simple one. Or let's see, what are some easy ones? For example, got a new dog. Let's figure out how we're going to, this is a challenge, how are we going to get the dog trained? Would you like to take a class, or would you rather have a private kind of a dog trainer, help us train our dog? So issues that are relatively easy to resolve right away.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, I know
Go ahead.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
Using the positive communication skills. So
yes.
Being respectful and polite.
Yeah. So you talk about debunking marriage myths in the book. And, you know, a lot of people think, if the relationship's good, I shouldn't have to work on it. Or it's going really, really well, so I don't need to work on it right now. What do you say to that?
I would say that there is always room for growth in people and in couples. So no matter how good a marriage is, it can always get better. And if we're not growing one way, then we're going the other way. So it is something that I think it does require basically ongoing vigilance to keep a marriage good and to make it better and better.
Right. And, you know, we do live in days of entitlement amongst many people. They have a sense of great entitlement. And one of the marriage myths you have in here is, hey, I shouldn't have to settle for less. I deserve better. Talk to us about that, if you would.
So that's like saying, I'm so perfect, I should have a perfect person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so who's really perfect? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of that is because people think this way because we've been raised with this combination of growing up with fairy tales about the effortless happily ever after and the romantic sitcoms that end in a wedding, and we're going to assume everything is just fabulous from then on. And a lot of this mentality comes from not having positive role models about what's a realistic good marriage. All relationships have ups and downs, and everybody has characteristics that are character traits that are less than perfect. And part of our emotional and spiritual growth is learning how to get along with each other and appreciate our value as human beings and as partners and lovers, and be able to accept the whole package and realizing that it's all about growth. A big part of growth is accepting people as they are, unless they're particularly interested in changing, then that's really their business, not ours.
Right, right. And I think we all know people who do this, and we've probably all done it ourselves at some point, where we've just gone along to get along. We've given in to keep the peace at any cost. But you say failing to address a conflict can put that relationship at risk.
Right. You're talking about somebody who's placating. And in the book, I do discuss 5 ways people communicate when they disagree. And the most positive way, of course, is communicating in what's called an assertive way. It's not aggressive and it's not passive. It's being true to yourself, saying what you really want and how you really feel in a positive, respectful way. So when people do it the other ways, then particularly like the placating way of saying, okay, I'm going to just say okay because who wants to have an argument, or the other person might get upset with me. So you placate, and then inside, resentment starts building up inside, and it comes out in ways that aren't too good for the relationship.
Right, right. We often think, this is going to disappoint the romantics. And I've been there myself. When you think all you need is love, with love we can get through anything. And
right,
sadly,
right.
That's not always the case.
Yeah, it certainly isn't, because, as I said, relationships do have ups and downs, and it's not the fairy tale. It's not the happily ever after kind of movie either. It's real life and real issues. And people are now wanting in relationships, they're wanting something different from what, let's say, a couple of generations ago. People were happy to be married, and the women needed marriage to be supported economically, and everybody needed marriage for sex and have child rearing. In order to have society's approval, and all that's changed now. So people are looking for emotional satisfaction and spiritual satisfaction in their marriage, as well as the material and physical. And when they don't know this and don't know how to address that need, that's when they start getting cynical about marriage instead of using positive, wonderful tools and techniques to make probably a much more fulfilling marriage than may have been possible.
Yes.
100 years ago.
Yeah, and you have some wonderful tools and techniques in the book. You say in Marriage Myth Number 8, unfortunately, that a weekly marriage meeting can save any marriage is just that. It's a myth. But you say knowledge is power and marriage meetings can set you free. So talk to us about that, if you would.
Yes. Which part? The part that marriage meetings cannot save any marriage?
Right, right.
Okay, yeah, I think that's a really good question to address, because some people might think that marriage meetings are supposed to save very troubled marriages. And in fact, marriage meetings are basically for couples who have a fairly healthy relationship and do know how to communicate respectfully most of the time, at least. So marriage meetings are basically to make a ho-hum marriage better and an already good marriage great, and keep it that way. Keep it not every moment, because I said ups and downs, but knowing how to deal with what comes up positively and keep the connection strong.
Mm-hmm.
So the couples that are really in much, let's say, troubled relationships, those are couples that would need to address their issues with therapy. They would not be able to use the tools or follow the guidelines for respectful communication because their relationship has been damaged and is in need of more of a professional type of repair.
Right. And you do say, you know, with work and given the fact, as we just talked about, we can transform relationships with the marriage meetings and the tools that you provide in the book here. You share a lot of stories in the books. Do you have a favorite one you'd like to share with our listeners?
Oh, gosh, I haven't been asked that yet. Let me think about it. One that's very meaningful to me was, and I have a chapter on a couple that came in. They're an example of a couple that couldn't handle marriage meetings. Even in therapy sessions, they usually couldn't get through the marriage meeting. One or the other would sabotage it because they had so much anger that they didn't know how to deal with. And it was just beautiful to watch the transformation that happened, particularly in the man. He was so angry when he first started therapy that we'd have a marriage meeting sometimes in the session. And one time I remember he said, "I have nothing to appreciate," when it was time to express appreciation. Ooh. Well, you can always find something to appreciate. If you have a fairly healthy relationship, you can appreciate the person is sitting down with you to have the marriage meeting.
Right.
That they care enough about the relationship. But he said, "I have nothing to appreciate." And then over time, he became much more accepting of his partner, who he used to call her a slob and call her names and all. And then over time, it became more like, well, that's how she is, which is so much of a challenge. You know, when you talk about accepting imperfections, he was a very neat and tidy kind of a guy. And she was somewhere, I haven't seen their home, so I don't know, but I don't think it was the pigsty that he made it sound like.
Right.
Her standard was looser than his. And over time, they found solutions, like he hired a cleaning person, for example, so that he could get the house in shape at least while he wanted it, at least, you know, some of the
mm-hmm,
time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd say, but, you know, it doesn't last long. It would be kind of like with a shrug of his shoulders, and he accepted it.
Yeah. But it is the small things that drive people crazy sometimes, and, you know,
yes,
and
little
solutions that can make all the difference in the world. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Naomi?
A final thought is to do whatever it takes. If you want to try to have a marriage meeting, if your partner is resisting, make a deal. He or she might want you to do something. Says, "Okay, I'll see the movie you want. I just have one marriage meeting with me." And ideally, read the book first so that you can have the best chance for the best success during your meeting and enjoy it.
Well, that's a key point. Enjoy it. Thank you very much, Naomi.
And you're welcome. Thank you again for having me on the show, Vicky.
Oh, my pleasure. And great work here. And the book is called Marriage Meetings for Lasting Love, 30 Minutes a Week to the Relationship You've Always Wanted, packed full of tools and real life stories here that are, I think, are beneficial. And my guest, Marsha Naomi Berger, and we've been calling her Naomi, but she goes by her full name is Marsha Naomi Berger. And you can find out more about her and the work that she does. She's written a ton of articles too at MarshaNaomiBerger.com. MarshaNaomiBerger.com. All right, please do stay tuned. When we come back, we'll be joined by Melinda Blau. The book is called Family Whispering, and we're going to be looking at the whole family connection in the next segment. Please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other. Love and...
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Next week on Conversations Live, Vicky's guests include professional writer and photographer Helen Pepe, who shares her inspiring story in Pigs Can't Swim, and writer, rebel, musician, and recovering addict Chris Grosso, whose memoir, Indie Spiritualist, shares insights into its powerful spiritual breakthrough. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m. and 98.9 HD Channel 3. See conversationslive.net for upcoming show details and podcasts.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
News, traffic, and weather? Now you can get your information fixed weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
It's an institute you can't disparage. Ask the local gentry, and they will say it's elementary. Try to separate them.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and we are talking love and marriage and family today. And I'm very pleased to have with us in the second segment, Melinda Blau. She is an award-winning journalist who spent the better part of her 40-year career studying relationships. She's written 15 books and more than 100 magazine articles. Since 2000, when she began collaborating with the late Tracy Hogg, Melinda Blau has been the voice of the best-selling Baby Whisperer books. She's also a mother and grandmother herself. And her latest book took 10 years, is 10 years in the making. It's called Family Whispering, The Baby Whisperer's Common Sense Strategies for Communicating and Connecting with the People You Love and Making Your Whole Family Stronger. Melinda Blau, welcome.
Thank you, Vicky. It's nice to be here.
Well,
we're
I like.
There. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we're talking. That's good. We're on it. So I like the book because you talk about this in a very holistic, as did my previous guest, in a holistic approach with the whole family connection.
Yes.
You say it's not enough just to be parent and child and build on those relationships. You've got to build on the whole family. So let's begin by looking at what you mean by the whole family concept that you talk about in the book.
Well, the whole family concept is very basically acknowledging that it's never just between parent and child, any more than if you look at a marriage, it's never just between the two people if they have children. In a family, everyone is involved. It's a system, and what happens to one person affects everyone else, and what happens between two people in the family, so whether it's between a parent and child or between the spouses, affects the others. I think every book I've ever seen about parenting doesn't acknowledge that. And one of the things Tracy, who unfortunately passed away right before our third book came out, we used to talk about the fact that, you know, people would have children and the children would kind of take over the family. And she used to say, you know, don't allow your baby to become king baby and,
right.
and rule the roost. And it's not just about, not focusing on the kids too much, which that is a problem in many households today, that the children are the main focus. And what this book calls for is a family focus, saying it's not enough to just look at the child. You must look at any situation that rises. You look at the whole system, the whole family, not just the relationship or the person.
Right. And families have changed so much over the last decade. I mean, we're not looking at traditional families anymore. We have extended families all over the place now.
Yes. Families have come in many shapes and sizes and configurations now. But, you know, the basic, we are talking about family change, but this has been an issue, and this has been a situation for a very long time, since we've started in the 20s when we started, or the 30s when we really started having parenting books, it was always about, well, how do you raise better children? And what I'm saying is, let's make our families stronger and better, and then that will take care of everybody.
Right, right. So you're actually the third author I've talked with this month who's got a book out this month that was 10 years in the making. So tell us about why it took so long, how it came together.
Well, I will have to say I wasn't working on every minute of those 10 minutes.
Right.
I was doing other
right.
books. But Tracy and I started talking about this in 2014, and we realized that we had done
2004, right?
Pardon?
2004.
What did I just say, 2003?
14, it's okay.
Okay.
I just want to clarify that.
Thank you. In 2004, right before she passed away, and we knew at that time we had a contract to do a fourth book, and we said, well, where are we going to go from babies and toddlers? And the answer came to us. It was so obvious in a way, because once the babies are out of diapers and the toddlers go off to preschool around three, that's when the real challenge sets in, not of parenting, but of managing a family. And so we knew that we were going to go to look at the family. And my exploration of family involved talking to many, many parents and sometimes the children, when the children were old enough to have their own ideas, which, by the way, can be as young as 6 or 7, but mostly
right,
I interviewed teenagers and parents. And so, you know, traveling around the country, and actually I've met some parents in Europe as well and did some comparisons of families there, as well as I really combed all the research, because, you know, we know so much more than we did, say, 20 years ago about what makes for a good parenting relation, what makes for a good male-female relationship, or two adults. I shouldn't even say male-female, because I've also interviewed gay parents. And we know so much more, and so I was able to draw on that literature as well. And it took time to kind of sort through it all. And I was just telling someone the other day that it's changed me to write the book, that when someone asks me advice about their child, I don't answer the way I would, you know, even 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't stop myself from seeing the whole. So it's a very, very interesting and not a difficult switch to make, but it's so powerful when you start seeing beyond just the single relationships.
Yes, I could see that. The first half of the book is about opening our minds and starting to see things differently and see family differently. The second half, it provides tools to effect change within the families.
Exactly.
And one of the things that I thought was really powerful, that I think a lot of people probably just kind of accept, you know, it is what it is the context, you know, the territory everyone shares directly or indirectly, the household, the roles that we all play. I wonder
right.
if you could talk to us a little bit about how we look at the context of the family.
Right. Well, what I say in the book is that there's three factors. I call them the three factors. And I say, you know, we need to put on our 3F glasses as opposed to the 3D
yeah.
glasses. And the 3F glasses help us look at the individuals in the family, the relationships that they have. And then the context is the settings, the circumstances. So if you are living in the community, the schools that you go to, that your children go to, the workplace that each parent, if both of them work, even the historical moment, because parenting today is different from what it was 20 years ago, and certainly different from what it was in 1920. So you must look at all of those things. If there's a war going on, if the economy is bad, all of these things affect what goes on in a family, because they're outside pressures that the parents and the children bring home.
Right. And you share something in here that you shared apparently in your first book, which is a short quiz to determine your WPQ quota, your WPQ, which is your wing it or planet quotient. And I thought that was really pretty powerful too, because I think, again, that's something we just kind of accept. This is the way it is. But talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, in the first book, we talked about wingers and planners. And, you know, most of us fall someplace in between. But the winger is somebody who wings it all the time. They don't really have much schedules, and they may be always putting out fires. And some people can cope with that, and that's their personalities. But the question is, does it work in a family? And, you know, that's one of the—I have a lot of quizzes in the book. The planner, on the other hand, if they're very much extreme, is someone who is— At the worst, is inflexible. They've planned too much. Mm-hmm. No, this is when we're having dinner, and it doesn't matter if, you know, grandma calls from Idaho.
Right.
We can't talk now.
Right.
So something in the nice middle is preferable. But the biggest most important part of all these quizzes that I have in the book is to raise your awareness.
Mm-hmm.
At least do things consciously.
Right.
Don't just let life happen around you, which often it does, because parents don't sit down with the kids and think about, how do we get out of the house in the morning?
Right.
Why are we always yelling at each other in the morning? Why is dinner such a rushed affair? Why is everybody complaining about what's on the menu? What can we do about that? Instead, the mother, usually it's the mother, goes into her room at the end of the night and she wants to, you know, pull her hair out because, I can't stand this, you know. But there are so many things we can do if we pay attention and we really tell ourselves the truth. This is one of the techniques I use in the book. I call it the tell yourself the truth mantra. And it's when you get into one of those moments when you say, oh, God, I'm going to have to pay attention to this now.
Right.
Or, oh, no, we had the same old argument. And that could be with a child or an adult. And so you stop yourself. And you look around you and you say, okay, what just happened? Has it happened before? Have I been here? What have I contributed? And then you tell yourself the truth about it. You know what? This is exactly what happened last week. It happened before. Each time it happened, I did such and such, or I didn't do such and such. And so then you have an opportunity to do something different.
Yes. I laughed.
But if you don't have that consciousness, if you don't slow yourself down, everything is just going to keep being the same. You know the famous definition of insanity, if you
yes.
keep doing the same thing
right.
you've always done, you'll keep getting what you've always gotten.
Absolutely. And that's why I think the first half of this book is so valuable. It is really valuable because you do. I laughed when you said, you know, how do we react in the morning? How do we interact in the morning? Are we always yelling at one another? Because that was my house when we were little and my parents were very young, both had businesses, three mm-hmm. kids to get out the door. It was yell, yell, yell. Come on, come on, come on.
Right.
And
right.
I hate that. You know, there would have been a nicer kind of way to get up in the morning.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things I talk about in the book is also, you know, when I say it's never just between you and your child, there's also this whole population in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You have your mother in your head. You have your childhood in your head. Very often parents are trying to do exactly what was not done in their own childhoods,
right.
or very much they're trying to do it. But again, if they have the consciousness, they can realize, you know what? I'm bringing my mother into the, I hate to say this, I'm a mother and grandma. I'm hearing my mother's voice as, you know,
yes.
and either, oh, my God, I sound like my mother, or this is good. I'm being wise like my mother.
Right, right. Well, great advice. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to look at some of the tools and solutions that you share in the second half of the book. And my guest in this segment is Melinda Blau. The book is called Family Whispering. She also gives credit to Tracy Hogg, her colleague who passed away on this book. The Baby Whisperer's Common Sense Strategies for Communicating and Connecting with People You Love and Making Your Family, Your Whole Family, Stronger. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A family man.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to NuPro Supplements, we cover the world of animals. This Sunday, March 2nd, it's a Healing Sunday with Dr. Nels Rasmussen, gifted healer. Dr. Nels, best bioenergetic synchronization technique practitioner, will join us in the studio. We'll have open phone lines so he can do remote healing, rebooting, and balancing for you and your animal friends. He's free on the air, so give us a call on Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live, Vicky's guests include professional writer and photographer Helen Pepe, who shares her inspiring story in Pigs Can't Swim, and writer, rebel, musician, and recovering addict Chris Grosso, whose memoir, Indie Spiritualist, shares insights into its powerful spiritual breakthrough. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m. and 98.9 HD Channel 3. See conversationslive.net for upcoming show details and podcasts.
Conversations Live is giving away books, from New York Times best-selling fiction to the latest from innovative thought leaders in business and psychology. To find out where, when, and how, like us on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and look out for posts titled Book Giveaway.
Like what you hear? Be sure and support the sponsors who support your favorite programs on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Melinda Blau. She's an award-winning journalist. She's spent the better part of her 40-year career studying relationships and has written more than 15 books and 100 magazine articles. And her new book is called Family Whispering: The Baby Whisperer's Common Sense Strategies for Communicating and Connecting with the People You Love and Making Your Whole Family Stronger. And in the first half of the this segment with Melinda, we looked at the first half of the book, which, I mean, we covered a tiny fraction of it, but it is basically about opening up your mind and seeing things differently in the whole family concept view that Melinda writes about. The second half is how to put some of solutions into place and to effect the change we want. And so I wanted to ask you about chores. Let's just start there, because this is a huge thing in many families. You know, I was telling you in the break, I was the eldest and I was the one who did the majority of the chores. I'm sure my brother and sister would dispute that, but I clearly remember them outside playing while I was inside doing laundry. So let's talk about how chores should be split up. And you don't even use the word chores.
Actually, that was the first thing I was going to say to you, that I don't like the word chores. Chores are something that that parents assign and that children must do because they're the children and the parents are in charge. And my conception of the family is that you sit down as a family and you have what I call a family check-in, and you talk about things like, how do we get out of that? What do we need to get out of the house in the morning? What do we need to keep the house clean? How clean do we want the house? And actually talk about that as a family. And instead of talking about chores, you're talking about responsibilities and what roles do we need played? We need cooks. We need a garbage taker-outer. We need a waker-upper, which is a great job for a three-year-old. We need someone, you know, who will, a lawnmower, a vacuumer, it goes on and on. And to isolate the roles that are needed to get through the day in your house. So mom doesn't have to do, which is what happens in most houses. In the vast majority of the families that I interviewed, the mothers, either in front of their husbands, but more often behind their backs, complained about the chores. And this has been endless. We've had decades of chore wars. And I say we don't need to have chore wars. you know, the solution usually is, well, iron out your difficulties. The male, the adult partners should iron out their difficulties. And really, you know, what's really behind the troll wars? That's usually how people are told to think about it. You're really angry because she's out on Wednesday nights with her girlfriends. And you're really angry because he invited his mother for dinner and forgot to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you're harping on him about chores. And sometimes that's true. But that's not the solution. The solution is it's unfair for the adults to get all to have all the responsibility in the family and none of the enjoyment and none of the benefits, and for the children to get only the benefits and have no responsibility. And my thesis is this is our family. Let's run it together and run it like a co-op so that all the members chip in and all the members get benefits.
Right.
And the amazing thing that that does is when you tell a child, and the child knows, because kids really are smart, and they, even if when they're babies, they feel things. And so by the time they're 3 or 4 years old, they know if their mother puts them in a room and, you know, gives them papers to sort out that it's busy work. But they know the difference between that and here's some laundry. In one pile, put the darks and put the whites over here. And a three-year-old can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you start them. And you give them different jobs. Nobody has the same job every week because you don't, there's certain jobs that nobody wants to do in a family. So you spread it around. And certainly as the kids get older, of course, the earlier you start, the better. But you can start this even if, you know, a listener has children who are 8 and 10. Let's sit down and let's talk about it and don't use the word chores.
Right.
Say we all have to pitch in because this is our family. And never, ever tie allowance to it. I mean, I see people saying to their kids, you won't get your allowance this week unless you do your chores. Well, again, this doesn't give any, it doesn't help the kids at all. It's not giving them a sense of pride in what they do, a sense of responsibility. Now, a key piece of that is that you then have to back off and you have to let the child or your partner, because sometimes women do the same thing with their partners, they stand over them. Oh, you're not doing that right.
Yeah. Do it my way or it's not good enough.
Exactly. And I point out in the book, I call women like this the designated doer.
Mm.
And rarely it's a man, but most of the time it's a woman. And I have tips for the designated doer about, you know, not micromanaging everybody and realizing it's not your way. It's just different. It's not, you're not better. You may have more practice at doing something. They may make mistakes, but you know what? You're going to make mistakes at other things.
Right.
You know, and it's a way of really helping children grow up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it teaches them responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Accountability.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's not dictating to them.
Right, right.
And it's a really, I remember I was once sitting with my grandson and it started to rain and it was in the summer and his parents had covers to put over the couches outdoors. And I looked at him and I said, Sammy, those are really too heavy for me. And he knew I wasn't just doing it to get him to help me. I said, they're really too heavy for me. And that's all I had to say.
Right.
I was being authentic with him. I was being real. And he came over. He never complained. And he looked so proud after he helped me.
Mm, yeah. I used to have my little nephew around with me every weekend, and he liked to help me clean house. Now, whether he would do that now is big and grown. I don't know.
Right.
But he, it was part of our fun together.
You know, people say to me, my kids, I'll never get my kids to do this. And part of it is because they make excuses. They say, oh, he's too tired when he comes home from basketball. How can I ask him to vacuum?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why not?
Right.
Then maybe there's something wrong with how much basketball he's playing.
Yeah. Well, we're right at the end of our segment, unfortunately, because I have a load of more questions I'd like to get answered here. One thing you talk about is change is always a family affair. You talk about that in depth in the book. And you shared on an article in the Huffington Post, a study, you said when researchers ask family members to keep time diaries, it turns out that men and children's primary activity Men and children's primary activity after dinner is leisure. They feel good on weekday evenings. Women, on the other hand, who often catch up on chores, feel mostly negative. So something to consider, everybody who's part of a whole family.
Right, that's right. That's exactly right.
Melinda Blau, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate your time and insights. I know you've put a lot of effort into this book, and listeners can find out more about Melinda Blau's work at familywhispering.com, familywhispering.com.
That's great.
Yeah, the book again, Family Whispering, The Baby Whisperer's Common Sense Strategies for Communicating and Connecting with the People You Love and Making Your Whole Family Stronger. We will be back next week with an all live news show again. You can find me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617, if you have questions or comments on today's show, or you can email me at info@conversationslive.net. Follow us on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. And of course, we're on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See you next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.